Right, so hello and welcome to the In The Zone podcast with me, Mike Ryder.
And me, Josh Hughes.
In this episode, we're going to talk about the PhD and how people perceive people with a PhD or the whole PhD process. Is that right, Josh?
Yeah, so I think, because I've had a few sort of conversations recently and it sort of made me realise that a lot of people outside of academia or perhaps just, I've never really interacted with someone who's done a PhD or is doing a PhD before. And there's kind of a lot of different perceptions about what it is and what it means, because it goes from people who say, who sort of almost treat it like going to university is the same thing, whatever it is. So whether you're doing to some people, like if you do an undergraduate degree, a master's degree, or a PhD, you're just doing a degree to them, which in some way it is. It isn't just another degree, but it's also not, is it? It's the PhD is something so much more significant than an undergraduate degree, particularly. And then so you go from that to sort of people who think you're doing a PhD, you must be like a one in a million, you know, a beautiful mind type of thing, where, you know, nobody really understands what you're doing. Somehow you've been born with this amazing talent to change the world, but you sit in a university or something. That type of thing. It kind of, there's that range between
polar extremes.
Yeah, extremes between you're not doing anything particularly unusual to, oh my god, you're a unique person amongst the world that's uniquely special.
No, I completely take your point of view. I mean, a lot of my family, I think, would probably fall into the sort of the homogenous you're just at university for a bit more type thing. I think, especially, I remember when I used to tell my nana sort of, I'm going back to university. I mean, she barely got her head around what a university was in the first place.
Yeah,
but then it got to a point of, well, oh, you're going away again. Oh, and so it's just to her, it was just a sort of, you're going to be in a place that's away from your hometown for a length of time.
Right.
Okay. And as long as you're working hard, that's fine.
Yeah.
And that was sort of it. But I suppose that does point to sort of my sort of East End London working class roots, where my nan's generation, like, university was just a distant dream.
Well, yeah, I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? It not only is there different perceptions, you know, for different people, actually, there's quite a generational divide, isn't there? It's like people, some people who are older and the idea of university, was very distant. It's, well, you must be really special to go. No, you must be special to go to university. And if they understand what a PhD is, you must be extra special. And then you get to people who are perhaps still, a little bit younger than that, who probably went to university for free back in those days, and to them it's kind of, oh, well, everybody goes to university. Some people are like that, aren't they? And it seems to be younger and younger, kind of, as I think maybe as fees came in, university fees came in, or top-up fees came in the 90s, and it's like, oh, well, more people can go to university. And then when it became you pay for university, you know, when it was like $3,500 or whatever, and then went up to $9,000, but everybody could go.
Yeah.
So everybody does go. And so now it's kind of, it seems like university in and of itself, to sort of younger people, maybe middle-aged and down, it doesn't seem that special to go to university.
No, that's true.
And so I suppose there's that difference, isn't there, between, even if you see all types of degrees from undergraduate to PhD as the same, fundamentally, then if you're of the opinion that going to university makes you special, then doing a PhD is something special to do, isn't it? Whereas the other side is that, well, everyone goes to university, and I don't understand the difference between an undergraduate degree and a PhD, so you're basically just normal, but you've decided to stick around at university longer. I suppose, so that's sort of one lot of perceptions, isn't it? And then you sort of find people who know the difference between what a PhD really is. I suppose it's a lot of people who probably tried really hard on their undergraduate degree and thought about, oh, wouldn't a PhD be great, and maybe didn't make it. A lot of, you find a lot of those people as well, who think, well, maybe I could have done a PhD if I'd stuck around or got the right funding or whatever. And I think there seems to be that sort of group of people seem to perceive a PhD as something like you're lucky to do.
Yeah,
I think that's true in a way.
Yeah, there's an element to that. It's very strange, as you say, because there are different levels almost.
Kind of a multi-dimensional matrix of
stuff, isn't it? But especially with the changing culture these days as well, with I think there's more and more people are going back to university to do postgraduate, but specifically postgraduate taught.
Yeah.
And I think there's a distinction to be made there between even the postgraduate taught and the postgraduate research, and then the PhD up beyond that, even actually, because I think we're getting to a point, especially with the marketisation of higher education, where it's almost you need a master's degree. That's almost like what the undergraduate degree used to be maybe 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to, when I finished my undergraduate degree, like going to one of these sort of mass recruitment things for Virgin Media, I think it was, and there was like a bunch of us sat in this room vying for these few jobs, and you know, I got up and said, oh, I've got a first, you know, and I worked really hard for it and all this kind of stuff, and then someone got up and said, I've got a master's degree. And I was like, oh, wow, I've got a master's degree. They're going to beat me hands down. Mm. And the guy who was in charge was like, didn't give a shit, didn't care. It was like, you've got a master's degree, so what? And I was like, well, what am I going to do?
Yeah, I mean, that ties in with the employability side of things, I suppose, because there is a point now where you're saying, well, it's kind of like that's the minimum standard. You get a degree, whether it be a degree or a master's maybe, but then it's what you do while you're doing that degree, and then how you can demonstrate the skills that you've gained during that time.
Yeah, and I think this is something that I've sort of realised recently, actually, being back on the job market, is that, all right, it's great having a degree and it's great having a first or a 2-1 or whatever, or even a master's, but it's like, well, what else have you done?
Hmm.
Like, you're good at your academics, well, so is everybody else in the queue.
Hmm.
Like, what else have you done? And it's, I think perhaps when I was an undergrad, it was, you thought of summer as this great, of the summer in between, you know, year one and two and two and three, oh great, I can have a break now. Whereas actually I probably shouldn't have thought like that. Should have thought, oh great, it's a great opportunity to go and do an internship or work experience, something like that. And I've started to wonder whether maybe it was the culture of the university I went to that was sort of, it wasn't aggressive in terms of chasing those summer opportunities.
Right.
Or maybe it wasn't encouraged, or you weren't kind of, it wasn't really suggested.
Right. And I suppose it also comes down to the degree programme you're doing as well.
Yeah.
Because I feel like management disciplines, for example, marketing disciplines, which is something I sort of teaching on the side as well, I think you tend to find they're probably more skills focused than maybe English literature, dare I say, or maybe law like you do, and criminology.
Yeah, I suppose, because if you're doing a degree in accounting and finance, well, you kind of need to build more skills because it's, you know, a highly competitive corporate world there, isn't it? Whereas if you're like me, you did a degree in forensic science and criminal investigation, well, you can't really sort of turn up at a police station and say, oh, can I just hang about for 6 weeks or however long?
No.
But then I suppose with maybe English, it's difficult to do. There aren't necessarily roles that you could do with English in a summer.
But what do you do with an English degree? Is the question I think many people might be asking themselves, which I still like to ask myself from time to time. But, I mean, to bring this back to the PhD then, as this was sort of the sort of central thing that we kicked off with, how do we think these sort of perceptions of the PhD compare to even, say, the master's degree these days? I mean, do you think there's a difference in the jobs market for people with PhDs?
I think it depends, isn't it? Because when you look at a lot of job opportunities these days, in academia, it's like, if you want to be anything, you know, a research associate, so like a research fellow or a lecturer, it's PhD or nothing, pretty much.
Mm.
Or unless you're in a highly specialised field where practice is kind of a major thing, in which case you might say, you know, lots of law schools will hire somebody who's been a lawyer if they're willing to start a PhD as well.
Yeah.
So in that sense, there's kind of a clear distinction between having the PhD and not having it, or at least being willing to get one. Whereas then outside, it seems like lots of places really aren't that bothered, or assume them to be fairly similar.
Yeah.
Because there'll be some job adverts that'll require a postgraduate degree, but it'll just say Masters or PhD.
Yeah.
And that obviously doesn't necessarily mean Masters or PhD, it just means we'll take a Masters degree.
Yeah, and I think there's a very big difference, obviously, between a Masters and a PhD. Mm. And even, as I said before, between a taught Masters and a research Masters. Because, I mean, in a research Masters, you're essentially left to your own devices for a year. Whereas in a taught Masters degree, it's very structured. It's almost like year 3 of undergraduate plus a little bit. in a way.
Yeah, a bit more complex.
In a way, yeah. Just to give people an idea of what people might expect to have done. So the skills that you learn in doing that are very different, I think. And you're right, I think a PhD does seem like a bit of a bonus unless you're in a specifically research-focused type job.
Yeah.
Or a sort of a field where those sort of extra research skills come in useful.
Yeah. And I mean, that's or indeed your, if it's a really highly specialised field.
Yeah.
So I've seen a few job adverts recently where they want somebody very highly specialised and basically looking for PhD students to be advised on these issues. And therefore wouldn't take a master's degree, someone with just a master's degree, because that's not enough to be highly specialised.
Right.
But
by being highly specialised, surely that's also a detriment in a way, because you're highly specialised in a specialised area.
Yeah, so this is something else that sort of seems to crop up in the job market, isn't it? Is that by being highly specialised, you might be in a position where you've lost more general skills.
Yeah, I was thinking this as you were talking, actually. I wonder, is there an element to which you could say a PhD is a detriment in certain aspects of job hunting? Because, I mean, this is also similar to the argument between going to university at all and not, where you say, well, okay, so you've gone to university and got a degree, but in those 3 years, you could have actually basically worked your way up in a company, earned money, and gained the practical skills you need in that job. Take it a step higher, and you get to, well, actually, you've already done all that previous stuff. So now you've just gone and sort of spent 3 years researching some obscure field. But why did you do that when you could have been working? Or you could have been sort of gaining more sort of vocational qualifications. Why is your degree on some niche aspect of history necessarily relevant to make you better employable, or more employable, rather, I should say, than the next person that comes along?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's sort of a very similar sort of argument, isn't it? To, you know, why do a PhD in terms of jobs is a similar argument to why do a degree at all, isn't it? I mean, sometimes I look at the people who I went to, you know, school and college with who didn't go to university, and I think, well, maybe I should have just done that. But then, you know, you think about actually the potential that you can go on to earn even greater with a PhD, with a master's or a PhD. Is like something, I think with a master's degree, you're on average earning like 13% more than those with just a degree. And with a PhD, you're on average earning 20% more.
But at the same time, I think those averages can easily be skewed.
Oh, yeah.
Especially by maths. Because one of the things they often sell you at school is, oh, yeah, people with a maths A-level earn so much more than people without a maths A-level. But then that's also because people with maths A-levels tend to do things like accounting. People that do accounting tend to get jobs in accounting, and accounting is a very highly paid area.
Yeah.
Whereas people with an English degree, and I'm going to use English as an example because I have an English degree, it doesn't lend itself naturally to the same level of income unless you happen to have ended up in a very sort of specific area of journalism, say, or sort of presenting, whatever. Most people end up in teaching, so that skews the averages a bit, is what I'm sort of saying, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose it also depends upon whether your PhD... the way in which you've done your research, and maybe if you've done other things alongside it, and what skills you've generated, because without doubt you're going to be good at research and you're going to be good at analysis. But you know, if you've not done any teaching, well, you're going to struggle to say how good your communication skills are.
Yeah.
beyond, when I say struggle, I mean pretty much you're going to have good written communication skills. That's a given, but how are you going to say they're so much better than somebody with just a degree?
Yeah.
And if you've not done, you know, teaching or conference presentations or whatever, how are you going to say that your verbal communication skills are so much better?
Yeah.
So I think in terms of perceptions of the PhD for a job hunting, it can be really useful if you've used it as an opportunity to develop really good skills, and you can show that. But if you're, you know, some people sort of turn up, just do lock themselves in their office, do their research, and go home, and don't really engage with anything else, don't really do anything else, and it's like, well, you've not developed that many skills.
What was the point in that then?
Kind of, yeah. But I suppose then there's another perception of the PhD that it's just people fulfilling their intellectual curiosity, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I suppose in a way everybody is doing that, But it can all, you know, it's not just one dimensional. You can also use it as a way, well, as the way, as we've said, a way to develop lots of skills, to or to, you know, raise yourself in the job market to a higher level.
Yeah, I suppose it depends then on why you do the PhD in the first place and the way you're able to communicate that to employers and apply it to a specific job specification, I guess you could say. Because some people, I think it's fair to say, do just fall into PhDs, especially those in the sciences maybe, who might have found themselves a decent supervisor, who might have then had a project, and then suddenly they find themselves on a 3-year program. And before you know it, they haven't actually worked outside of university setting. Whereas others might fall into it for another route. Or equally, you might have been like me, you might have taken 10 years out of academia and actually you've had to work really hard to get back into it in the first place. So you've got a better idea of why you're doing it, I guess you could
Yeah,
say.
I think there's definitely a lot of people who, you know, just sort of fall into it, isn't it? And I suppose in that sense, that kind of contributes to the idea that it's just another degree, it's not special. Because if someone has spent, what, like 7 years in a row, maybe the same university, maybe different ones, but they're essentially, to the outside world, they're just still a student
Doing more.
doing more, then in that sense, it kind of, yeah, it does seem, you know, the PhD isn't special, particularly. Or maybe if you're in sort of the natural sciences where a lot of your work is lab, is just lab work, and you're basically just doing more lab work, and okay, maybe as you go from undergraduate to master's to PhD to maybe to postdoc, you know, maybe you supervise lower ranking people in the lab, but you're still fundamentally just doing lab work. So in that sense, it's kind of, it is very similar, no matter what level you're at. But compared to you know, sort of social sciences and humanities, where I suppose you know, fundamentally you're doing the same thing, you're reading and writing and doing analysis, but it's a much greater level of complexity, isn't it?
Yeah, it's different types of work, isn't it? I think. And I think some people might even question whether it is work at all. I only think, just having spent some time outside of academia and looking in on it as a sort of through the frosty windows, as it were, I always longed to be back in academia because to me it felt like it was somewhat, I don't say easier, but I feel like it was something more close to what I wanted to do maybe personally than not. But there's this sense that, well, actually, if you're in the world of work, you have to do work because you're forced to do work. And I think there's a sense that, well, actually, the people in academia tend to be in academia because it's something they choose to do. They're doing something that sort of follows a line of their own personal intellectual curiosity, as you say. So it feels like less work than maybe doing a sort of humdrum 9-to-5 office job.
And I suppose as well, the fact that most people in most universities can kind of run their own diaries, you know, work from home on a day that they're not teaching or don't have meetings, can go for coffee whenever, can turn up at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock if they want, and do some work on a Saturday or the weekend if they want, or you know, yeah, are free to run the diaries according to that whatever schedule they want, and you know, commitments within it. But so I suppose in that sense, doing the PhD and being able to, work from home or work from a coffee shop or whatever, it can lead into that idea of, or perception for some people, that actually you're not really doing any work.
Yeah, very much so. And again, it also links with subjects as well, because I remember when I did my undergrad, and I mean, I'd initially done a year in engineering before leaving engineering to do English, because I discovered I like books a lot more than I like doing maths homework. Someone who was an engineer at the university I was at said, "Oh, you're not like normal English students, Mike, because I just see them lazing around all the time, but you actually do work." And I was just like, well, yeah, we all do work, but it's just different types of work, isn't it?" I mean, obviously, I did read probably more than the average English student, it's fair to say, and I probably did do a bit more work than maybe the average English student as an undergrad. But at the same time, it is perceptions, and there is this perception that work is a certain type of thing. Work is something you do. You go into 9-to-5, you sit at a computer, or maybe you work in a lab because that feels like work, inverted commas. Whereas sitting and reading a book all day doesn't feel like work to some people, even though it is, but it's a different type of work.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, so I suppose in that sense, there's different perceptions of the PhD, yeah, according to what discipline you're in, isn't it? And if you're doing a PhD that, yeah, requires lab work, then people will see that as work. If it requires a lot of reading, then people will be like, well, that's not
Well, yeah, I mean, it
work.
also ties in with this idea of, well, what is the point of it? Why are you doing that? I think a lot of people could maybe make that accusation of subjects like English, just because essentially a lot of people just think, oh, well, they just think Shakespeare, reading a couple of books. I mean, what impact does that have? So then in that sense, I think, well, why are you doing that? What's the point?
Yeah, and I suppose there's a perception that reading for a PhD or for anything academic, really, I think, is just reading, like it's reading a book or like it's reading a newspaper.
Yeah.
When actually the level of complexity is far greater. You know, one of the things that I joke about with some people is, you're just tapping away on a keyboard and read some stuff, surely it can't be that hard. I'm like, well, why don't you actually just read the stuff that I've just read?
Yeah.
I've just written. And it's like, well, no. Quite often it's just like, oh, I won't bother. It's all right.
Yeah.
So even in making the joke the idea that I don't do any work or I do stuff that isn't really work, and then when you turn it around and say, well, actually, here's what I've done.
Yeah.
It's like this implicit acceptance that actually not only is this work, but it's really difficult. But I'm still going to make the joke, isn't it?
I mean, do you think then maybe we struggle as PhD students, or maybe as academia in general, to really maybe convey what PhDs are, what they involve, and to show people that aren't within the field maybe what it is?
I think, because quite often I describe doing a PhD as like I'm writing a book of original research.
Yeah.
And that seems to be tangible enough for everybody to understand, or most people at least. I'm writing a thesis. Like, what the fuck is a thesis?
Yeah, it's true.
But again, I think it's, even if I say I'm writing a book of original research, I don't think that necessarily conveys the whole thing, really, because some people say, oh, well, I did research when I did my undergraduate dissertation. I'm like, right, well, your undergraduate dissertation was like 10,000 words, so do eight or nine of them in a row and link them all together. Come up with... As well, I think, and come up with an original contribution to knowledge, which is actually the focus of the PhD, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably something that people don't convey very well, or we don't convey very well. Because ultimately, in order to create an original contribution to knowledge, you have to stand atop the mountain, if you will, and build something on top, which means that you're essentially... I've said, well, isn't a PhD like a world-leading activity to some people? And they've said, yeah. And some people have said, no. It seems to depend how close, whether you're still in a PhD or how close you are from your PhD. The further away people get from it, people seem to say, no, it's not world-leading. But by making an original contribution to knowledge, it at least feels world-leading at the moment, doesn't it? Because when I started my PhD, I remember watching or reading something, and it was like, imagine the knowledge of the world as a giant sphere, the ball. At the end of your PhD, when you've made your original contribution, you will create like a little mound on the ball, like a little fingerprint raised, basically. And everybody else who graduates in the same year will make that same little expansion of the ball until the ball grows. And so you're making something really at a tiny point to grow this ball, but the fact that you're even making that little raised bit of the ball is really quite something special, I think.
Maybe. I mean,
I suppose it depends what the actual contribution is, doesn't
it? Yeah, and what you're saying, I suppose, does tie in with the whole humanist concept of progress and what is progress. What is knowledge, and why do we value some forms of knowledge more than others? I think ties in very closely with my area of sort of study, I guess. I know I'm sort of interdisciplinary myself, but I often feel this strongest when I have my English hat on. It's like, well, okay, so what knowledge is valuable, and why are some things more seen as perceived by the public as being more valuable than others?
Yeah, I suppose it also links in, because it's PhD is highly specific, it links in, there's also a perception that if you've got a PhD, you must know pretty much everything.
In that particular field, yeah.
Well, yeah, in the particular field, but then also people think, oh, well, we're doing a pub quiz tonight, so we'll just give the quiz sheet to him.
Yeah.
Because he's got a PhD, he'll know everything.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what the bloody hell do I know about 17th century Baptists or something?
Yeah, it's
nothing.
True. Well, yeah, exactly.
So I suppose in that sense, it's a bit like, before the podcast, we were talking about vets and how some people assume if you're trained as a vet, you know everything about every animal ever.
Yes.
And you were telling me how actually it's not quite the same. It's not quite that.
Well, no, because they only really train in sort of like a handful of animals. Would be your sort of domestic cats and dogs and a handful of farmyard animals. So sort of sheep, cows, horses / pigs, maybe. And then everything else is kind of learnt on the job, which makes sense really when you think about it, because they only have 5 years to do it in. And I mean, doctors don't know everything about the human body and they just know a small bit about humans. But it does tie in with this perception I think people get, that even at a lower level, when you're just doing an undergraduate level, I think when I tell people I've got an English degree, they'll then go, oh, have you read this? And invariably I won't have read this, because despite the fact I probably read more than anyone else I know, there are more books in existence than I can possibly have read.
Yeah.
And no, having an English degree does not mean I've read everything, because I've worked, yeah. But there is this general sort of concept of this is what you must be spending all your time on at university doing. And I think the reality is quite far from the truth. It's like, I suppose it goes with this idea that, well, the more you learn, the less you know, in a way that...
Yeah, there's that...
The deeper you get, the sort of more you find out you don't know, really.
Was that... I can't remember what it's called, but there's a graph about how much confidence you have in what you know, isn't there? And that you start off knowing nothing, and so you have no confidence in it. And then when you learn something, you kind of have whole confidence in what you've learned. So you have quite a lot of confidence. And then after a little while, when you learn some more, you realise what you don't know, and suddenly your confidence plummets.
Mm.
And that's sort of quite a typical, I think, PhD experience, isn't it?
Mm.
Or maybe not just PhD, maybe wider, maybe sort of the entire academic experience. That, you know, when you start off, yeah, you learn some things and you're confident in what they are because those are the basics and those are what everybody agrees to. And then you start to find the grey areas and you start to lose confidence. And then it almost feels like the entirety of the PhD is building back your confidence up to a point where you feel you know
something.
Feel you know something about your subject. But in reality, you know, you probably actually know. Like I said before, you've kind of got to stand on the top of the mountain to make a contribution. So I think most people actually probably do know more than they accept or realise, because they're constantly comparing themselves to the heavyweights in their field, and so they don't realise that, you know, most people who finish a PhD probably know as much, if not more, than the vast majority of people who are teaching about that subject. I'll make that claim.
Okay, you can make the bold claim.
I'll be bold. Because fundamentally, by pushing the envelope of research and of knowledge, you must, almost by definition, you have to be, you know, right up, keeping right up with the research.
Mm.
And so, you know, it might just be your very specific area, but you probably, you know, say you're in English, and you history, and your PhD's on, I don't know, the Roundheads and the Cavaliers or something. It's English Civil War.
Shout out to Claire there.
Yeah, shout out to Claire.
She loves that sort of thing.
But you know, well. I won't say this is all about Claire because it's not. But no, say your PhD was on the English Civil War, and English Civil War is taught, I don't know, it's taught in most universities in Britain, in the history department. But if your PhD is on that, you probably know all the research, all the best research, and where, you know, at a level that's really pushing it, and it's really at the edge, the cutting edge. Whereas most people who teach it will probably, you know, refresh themselves of any major recent works every summer when they're planning their lectures.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there is, I suppose, a point about sort of generalists and specialists here. And I think the realities of teaching at universities is that a lot of people that teach at universities, they're allocated teaching that they might not be necessarily specialist in, and they might have had to brush up on themselves.
Yeah.
So yeah, if it is in your own specialist area, chances are you will know more than the person teaching it, I think, especially the lower down the levels at university, maybe it's sort of first and second year, perhaps. I mean, it's an interesting one, really, isn't it? And it's funny, because I was just thinking about digital marketing, actually, because I had an interview for something related to digital marketing the other day, and I was just sort of talking with the interviewer, and we were saying, well, the idea that, well, there aren't really that many textbooks on digital marketing, obviously, because it changes so quickly and academia just can't essentially keep up. because it's like, well, you can look in any library now, and you'll probably find a lot of textbooks in there that still refer to things like Google Plus, because Google Plus obviously doesn't exist anymore. Google scrapped it, but this is how fast things move. And I suppose you could take the example of digital marketing there to actually really apply to most modern day sort of cutting edge stuff. History is probably a slightly different one, I think, because it's been going on for such a long time. Like, whereas your stuff in sort of autonomous weapon systems and the law around sort of killer robots is sort of very much still in up for discussion,
yeah,
as it were, and it's more sort of a fertile field for new knowledge and whatnot.
I suppose that also maybe doesn't lead to I suppose there's a perception of history, isn't there? And maybe we're getting a bit specific when it comes to the perception of the PhD, but there's a perception of history that, well, lots of things, everything's already been done. And then how can you possibly put a new spin on the English Civil War, the Cuban Missile Crisis,
Shakespeare,
whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so in that sense, I suppose the PhD is, there's a perception of a PhD as rehashing something that's already gone before. Because if you're from the outside and it's difficult to understand a new spin, maybe you're going to do a xenofeminist reading of Shakespeare.
Xenofeminist? I've heard about it the other day.
Sounds interesting.
Well, xeno being alien, outsider. What is it?
I'm not quite sure.
Oh, okay. Well, look, that'll be another podcast.
I just thought it sounded cool.
It does sound cool.
Or, you know, I don't know, a game theory reading of history of the English Civil War or whatever. You're putting this new theoretical spin on something that for the vast majority of people, all they understand about is in terms of facts and dates and stuff. And this happened and this happened and this happened. So I suppose in that sense, it's in terms of if you do a new theoretical appraisal of something, then it can be really difficult. The perception of the PhD can be really difficult to understand, and probably people will just resort to thinking it's just you're plotting, you know, events rather than analysing them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. I think this links with some of the other podcasts we've done about academia in general. I think really this points back to the problem really being with us. I say us in the sort of widest possible sense, like us, we researchers, we academics, because I think there is a problem maybe with some people aren't maybe proactive enough in making their research accessible to a wider audience or being able to explain it in a way that shows how relevant it is to the modern day world, as it were, or just specifically even to their field maybe. And so we don't really help ourselves in a way, because I think a lot of academics are by nature a little bit introverted because they just sort of do their own thing and they don't look beyond their bubble maybe, and that's a problem.
And I suppose there's also a question about perception of the PhD in terms of whether there is a divide between professional academics, lecturers and research fellows and whatever, and PhD students, because in some departments PhD students are essentially seen as staff, aren't they? And particularly like in continental Europe, they're sort of treated as staff, whereas in a lot of departments in Britain, I think particularly in the US, you're treated as students and with a very definitive divide between the PhD students and the staff.
Yeah, especially, and with the changing market as well, I think that the emphasis is very much on us as we young academics or us early career academics to emphasize this whole public engagement stuff, because the people who are already in jobs have jobs. Like all we have are 0-hour contracts and low pay and high expectations, because with the offer that maybe one day in the future we might get a job, because the market's changed so much and there are so many PhDs out there, that we're the ones that happen to work to try and sort of justify the work of everyone else that maybe aren't doing the sort of things we are.
Yeah, I suppose, like you mentioned, then high expectations.
Yeah.
And it links back to what we were saying earlier about the job market. And that lots of people, I think myself included, thought, I'll do a PhD and businesses will be crawling over each other to get to hire me. And
Josh, I wish you'd spoken to me
I wish I had.
I could have told you.
But of course, I think it's average 60 PhDs go for every academic job.
Yeah,
so
imagine that.
That's, you know, average. And then, you know, all of the kind of the fields that sort of normally accept PhDs, so things like museum curators or archivists or specialist librarians, those jobs are already filled by kind of the overspill from academia already. And this is something that I think probably prospective PhD students aren't really aware of. And I definitely wasn't.
Yeah, I think maybe we need to do more of that, more emphasising as well that you do need to think about your employability post-PhD, because otherwise you just get there and suddenly you're unemployed and overqualified, because like Sainsbury's aren't going to take you on with a PhD.
Well, exactly. But I think as well, something that... who's that? Paul Mason, the journalist.
Yeah.
It was a journalist, now is sort of a Marxist sort of speaker, radical. Anyway, I listened to something he said the other week about how, you know, kids from... In his experience, some of the people that he was speaking to were sort of people from working class towns who went away to university, got a degree, sort of came back to their crap town essentially and said, I'll be a bus driver or I'll be an electrician or a spa, a chippy or something.
Mm.
And it's sort of, 10, 15 years ago, those were the jobs for people who didn't go to university.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like people go away to university, come back, and then because everybody else has got a degree, they've basically stood still. They've not
really raised the minimum bar. Yeah.
Exactly. That's it. Yeah. And I suppose like we were saying before, getting a PhD is now part of just an extra bar.
Do you think it's interesting actually that one? I mean, I'd definitely say master's degrees are these days, because even the lower ranked universities are like, well, actually, you need to get a PhD. They say, well, they're trying to sell their programs, so I say, like, oh. Give your career the postgraduate edge is a slogan used by one university I'm aware of. This whole idea that actually you need a postgraduate degree just to even be able to complete in the first place. I don't know if maybe PhDs are a bit different, because I think if you're doing a PhD, you're probably going to look into a different career path perhaps. Yeah. But you're right. I think for some people maybe going into it, especially those who fall into it, they're maybe thinking, okay, it's going to make me more likely to get a job in the future. But actually... you need to take that time to step back and sort of see what else you can do.
Yeah, I suppose it certainly, having a PhD certainly makes you stand out amongst people who don't have them.
Mm.
But you kind of, if you do a PhD, you end up in a different arena, basically.
Yeah,
don't you? You end up in a different group, going for. But you end up going for the types of jobs that people with PhDs go for.
Yeah. So therefore, you're just on another. You're in another similar.
Yeah.
Sort of pool.
So you either end up fighting sometimes feels like a losing battle in terms of the pool of other PhDs to compete for jobs, or you drop down to the level of people with master's degrees and undergraduate degrees to go for graduate schemes.
So, and in which case you might struggle with those because you've spent the last 3 years doing something very niche compared to the young people.
Yeah, or
you've got all these real experiences.
Or you might be stuck in a position whereby you want to compete with the other PhD students, but if you drop down, I don't know if drop down is the right phrase actually, but compete with the undergraduate students for jobs instead. Mm. Go for graduate schemes, which are often a really good way into a decent job. But then, because you've essentially gone down to the level of a good undergraduate, it's really difficult to then come back up to the level of someone with a PhD. You see what I mean? Like, so if you go down to an entry level, if you've got a PhD, essentially you should, at least one would hope, you could go into a job in a big international company in kind of a middle ranking role or early middle ranking role. Whereas if you drop down to compete with undergraduates, you go in an entry level role, and it's difficult to then leapfrog back to where really you should be.
Yeah, but then equally, you've not gained any experience in that time. You've just been doing research. I mean, as an employer and as someone who's had a bit of work experience, been in the real world a bit, I would be very suspect about just taking on someone who's got a PhD and thinks they know it all, because I think that often they don't. And I think I'd be more keen to see maybe the PhD student who's got some real world work experience, who's done stuff in their spare time and has done all these extra other things, than I would not. Because, I mean, even with master's level, when I was working in ghostwriting, see other podcast, we'd have people come in with like master's degrees in creative writing. And the realities of professional writing are very different to how maybe creative writing is sold at a postgraduate level to these students. So they think it's all airy, fairy, easy peasy. Like, write a few poems, spend a couple of days reading a few books. But actually, no, it's hard work. And it's not the sort of romantic vision of sort of creative freedom that you think it is.
Yeah, I think I've thought about this, particularly with creative writing, because I've ended up having conversations with people who've said stuff like, oh, I might do a master's in creative writing as a career break. I'm like, are you having a bath? A master's degree is not a career break. That is frankly an insult to people who've got master's degrees.
Well, you'd be surprised. You do see quite a few people doing that sort of thing, actually. It's very, very strange. But then the people that can do that are often the people that are financially well off enough to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I suppose I was perhaps being a bit too defensive about that. But people do treat them as a career break.
If it's creative writing, some people do. No, I've met people that have done that.
Yeah. But they're not going to get out of it what they kind of should do, really.
No, it depends why you go into it, I think. Because, I mean, I've got some very sort of personal experiences with creative writing courses where I left engineering to do English with creative writing, thinking that, oh, the creative writing is what I do in my spare time. I was writing novels in my spare time. Turned up, and basically I was the only person that had ever written more than sort of a couple of sides of A4. And I was given a very big shock into like the sort of realities of the people doing some of these courses. I mean, obviously it's different at postgraduate level maybe, and especially at PhD level, because the idea is that you do produce some substantive work. Mm. But you're right. And I think this is the problem, and this is why it's so important to do everything you can to gain as many skills in addition to your PhD while you're doing it, I think.
Yeah. I suppose coming to the end of the podcast, it's perceptions of the PhD are wide and varied.
Mm. Just as experiences are wide and varied.
And that if you're a PhD student out there who's coming towards the end and you've not got any experience that an employer would like, you should probably try and get some as soon as possible.
Speak to your university careers department, I would suggest.
Yeah. Or volunteer.
Yeah, maybe start a podcast, but that's as long as you don't compete with us. All right, well, thank you very much. Thank you for listening to the In The Zone podcast with Mike Ryder and Josh Hughes.
For more podcasts and interesting chat, visit InTheZonePodcast.com.